What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Running connects us. The early mornings, the personal bests, the shared finish lines. At Marathon Sports, we're proud to be part of that journey with you. Our team helps you find shoes that fit your stride, apparel that feels good, and gear that keeps you moving. Stop by one of 28 New England locations or shop online at marathonsports.com. Marathon Sports, inspiring movement in everyone.
Everybody, hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Here and ready to go. We are in that final push of the year. We got the big whiteboard out this morning. It's like, guys, listen, this is literally everything we have to do before the end of the year.
Before the end of the year.
This is it.
Once we check all these boxes, then we are done.
Then we're done.
Right. Yes. No problem whatsoever. But yeah. But Jay, that's where I gotta say that we're also at that time of year where it's getting mighty chilly outside, but that doesn't mean I don't have some piping hot tea.
Oh, you got some piping hot tea? It is chilly, man. It was like 11 degrees this morning.
It was too cold. And it was cold in a way like where I watch all these like, you know, camping videos now. Like the Outdoor Boys have definitely sent me into like a weird little like trickle off in multiple direction situation where
it's how they get you.
It's how they
the
get
algorithm
you.
Knows
they do. And what's crazy is that like I will see like a camping video pop up and it's like camping in minus 10 and I'm like, oh, posh, you know,
right,
like it's like
right.
Call me when it's minus 20. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually joking. I'm impressed no matter what. But
I was trying to find a video to show Beth the other day because I was like, oh yeah, I just saw this. We were talking about like redecorating the office at the house or something. And I was like, oh yeah, I just saw a video that like might be good inspiration. I think I liked it. And I was looking through it and I was like, wow, basically, I don't know, 90% of my recently like liked things on Instagram are either the Celtics or K-pop Demon Hunter related. And I was like, they have been feeding me a lot of that lately.
Yeah.
Here it is on paper.
Right. Yeah. the algorithms, they get you.
They got me.
They'll find you. No, I know what you mean. But I, the what's funny about it to me though is that it's like 10 degrees and I'm like, dude, it's proper cold out there. Like,
it is proper.
It is miserable. So whenever I'm like minus 10, as if that's not even that cold, it's like, no, it's really cold.
It is really cold.
Freaking cold.
It's like if you were going out intentionally and you knew it was going to be like, I have to go out here to survive in the cold weather, that is the purpose of how I'm getting dressed, that would be one thing. In the meantime, it's like, I'm really only going to be outside from like, you know, my house to the car and the, you know, if I get out, you know, I fill up the gas or, you know, from the car to the office or whatever. It's like, like a minute or something.
Yeah.
So I'll just, you know, I'll be what's probably good enough to get me from there to there. And it's like, yep, that's exactly what it is. It's like almost good enough.
Almost good. I mean,
almost good enough, but you're still freezing.
I don't even know how to describe, like I'm wearing one of my favorite Disney hoodies right now. It's this like olive green color, which is like one of my fave colors to go for. And it's got these like fun illustrations of Mickey all over it. But like, I don't know if you can tell just by looking at the sleeve here, this thing, and I haven't even worn it that aggressively. I mean, it is so wafer thin. You would think that this hoodie was first purchased by like our great, great, great grandfather when he was like traveling across the ocean and staring into the dark mist of the abyss and potential land of opportunity to
maybe
come.
Maybe one day your great 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 grandson will be wearing, maybe it will have been passed down.
I don't think that there's a good chance that it's going to make it. Like, I'm not entirely sure it's going to make it till Christmas.
I mean,
at the current rate of degradation.
Yeah. How often are you wearing the sweatshirt?
That's the thing, is that I literally almost have to keep it like in an enclosed glass humidor box.
Yeah.
You know, just to make sure that it doesn't like disintegrate faster.
So you purposely don't wear it much.
Well, because because I'm sort of like, I, like even like where it rests on the hanger, I'm like, you know how there's like those little notches, like a plastic hanger, like right in like the middle section bits there. I'm like, those, if I let it hang long enough, they might just like
it might get permanent.
It might just rip through on the
I room. Like started being concerned about that myself. And now I have like shirts that I hang on hangers and then shirts that I just like all of my sweatshirts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They're just folded and stacked in my closet because they don't get the hanger marks.
The hanger. I know. Yeah. Well, it's not even the marks themselves. It's almost as if like I feel the weight of the hoodie will slowly allow the hanger divots.
I mean, just
to like rip through. They'll just
straight
like
rip.
Yeah, exactly.
Now here's the other approach, Ben, is that you should be wearing this even more.
You think so?
I think, well, here's, I don't know. This is, as you know, probably my favorite article of clothing that I own and definitely wear the most. It's so funny. I'm actually wearing a Mickey Mouse shirt as well.
I know, yeah.
Which I would say is in the same attitude as your shirt.
Yeah, no, I would say the same attitude. Yeah, you got some, what looks like some illustration-y bits going on there. Yeah.
Fun bits. But the hoodie I go for all the time is my Boston Celtics hoodie.
Yeah, I'm familiar with
it. You're familiar with it. Yeah, you've seen it.
Yeah, because you wear it a lot.
Because I wear it a lot. It's like, it's the one, it's like, if I get home and I'm putting on my comfy clothes, I'm like, yeah, I'll just throw this on. But part of me is because it's like my most comfortable hoodie. But then the other part of me is that like I feel like if I continue to wear it, it becomes like the vision of me the kids have in their head.
You know,
it's like, oh yeah, I remember Dad just like puttering around the garden in his Celtics hoodie. It's always the same one. You know, Dad.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, Dad's been wearing that hoodie. So, you know, like, part of me is like trying to curate that a little bit.
This
could be your, like, Addison always, like, whenever she thinks of you, she's like, yeah, Dad's always wearing that Mickey Mouse hoodie, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I wish that was even possible, but like, I genuinely think that, like, it's, I mean, like, I don't know how to describe the rate at which it's like every time I wear it, it's like I can like visually just see through the hoodie.
I see what you're talking about. But at this point, it's like, yeah, there's no going back. There's no restoring it. So you may as well just lean in.
And well, there is. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, you know what else it reminds me of was I was so excited when I joined the cross country team. So you're like my big older brother who I look up to. And I'm just a wee little lad.
Yep.
And so I'm in
tiny
like
tiny guy.
Right. Yeah. Just really small.
Like,
I mean, imagine small, double it, but not
so like a
not,
little, so like medium.
No. Like double the smallness. It's like multiplying by a negative. It becomes more negative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. But I think I did that math right. But
it's half it.
Half it. Yeah.
Imagine small.
Half it. Yeah. Or does that make it sound bigger? This is a classic. Like, does turning the air conditioning up mean make it warmer in the room or make it colder in the room?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, so what I'm trying to say though is that I remember in eighth grade, I joined the high school sport of cross country because our middle school did not have one. So every day at the end of my eighth grade, you know, classes at the middle school, I would go and get on the bus that would pick up students from the middle school that would then go and make a stop at the high school where they would pick up more students, and then normally they would take you home. I was the only student who would then get off at the high school.
This is my stop. I live here.
And it's like, huh, I'm here at high school. That's where I live. Exactly. With all the older kids because I'm so cool.
So cool.
And mature.
So mature.
You know eighth graders.
Yeah.
Mature. Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of, when we got to designing our first ever cross-country t-shirt my first season, I remember we were going through like design inspiration as to what to put on the back of the shirt. And I remember there was going to be like Cave Spring XC on the front, you know, like white with black letters. It was going to look gorgeous. And then on the back, we wanted to have a knight, but the knight was supposed to be giving the middle finger. But we had like the banner of like CSXC like draped across blocking the top of the knight.
So it was just like that?
So the knight's hand is like up in the air and it's like the very top of the hand was being blockaded.
I see.
And the in joke was that we all mature students knew what was really happening. That knight was giving the finger to anybody who was behind us. I'm sure we thought that.
We were good. Amazing the stuff. I cannot even remember. Okay, so my sophomore year of high school, we had lime for the soccer team, our team shirts.
Okay, yeah.
Same thing. They were lime green, super duper bright.
Right.
Don't know why they went for this.
Yeah.
I think basically they wanted to be high viz. Yeah.
Okay.
And the phrase they got put on the back, and excuse me if I'm accidentally swearing, was it was Pug Mahone. I don't know if you, I'm having such like a like brain blast remembering the phrase Pug Mahone.
It means nothing to me at all. I literally am unfamiliar with
it. I am pretty sure it means like, you know, like kiss my patukas, basically.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I am pretty sure that's what it means, but it's in a different language.
Okay.
Right. And so the captains decided this was going to be the team shirt. And like sometimes it'd be like game day, everyone wear your Pug Mahone shirts. And people just wear them to school. And it's like, everyone's like, what's that mean? It's like, oh, it's probably some soccer thing.
You know, all day I dream about soccer.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's Adidas.
Yeah,
I don't know
what?
That's Adidas. I don't know if that's like all day I dream about soccer. I don't know if that's actually what it means, but I feel like it became like the headcanon.
Yeah. And now I'm like, is that what it meant? I can't even remember. I'm going to have to look it up what it means now afterwards. Maybe I've just been saying some naughty words here on the pop.
I know. Yeah. It's like what we're going to discover is that it's like a really inappropriate thing. And so like as you've been saying the word, what they're hearing at home is just bleep.
Yeah. Right. You don't even know what our shirt said, y'all. It was terrible. We can't believe we got away with it.
I can't believe that this is two different instances of our high school sports basically putting like profanities on the back of the shirts.
Well, this was another example. We had a guy in on the cross country team, and he was exceptionally skinny. Like the skinniest person you've ever seen.
Okay.
Right? I'm sure you know who I'm talking about. And we were getting hoodies. There's such a trend. There's such a trend. When kids are allowed to put stuff on shirts.
It's like, ooh.
Yeah. Well, we had a nickname for this guy, which was like an ironic nickname. And so on the hoodies, we were like, you should put Stit on the back of your hoodie because then it will read your nickname in the mirror because all of the letters are reversible. It'll just be backwards then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he totally got away with that.
He did.
I can't believe he did it.
He was literally walking around the halls of Cave Spring High School with S-T-I-T on the back of his hoodie.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a couple of different things that were happening. This must have been your senior year.
Something thereabouts. Yeah.
Yeah. Somewhere in that zip code because he was younger than I was.
Yeah.
He was on the team. So yeah, you had to be a senior. I had to be a sophomore when this thing happened. And similarly, we also had in the same year in this kid's class, there were so many Johns, like J-O-H-N's on the team that like on like day 8 of practice, this freshman named John, we were like, we're going to call you Dave instead.
Yeah.
And he just became Dave.
On the back of his sweatshirt, it was Dave.
It was Dave. And it was the craziest thing. Like I ended up having like woodshop with Dave and I would call him Dave.
What's up, Dave?
And it's so funny because like you give anybody a nickname, it's like, it's not that big of a deal to call them by their nickname.
Yeah.
You know, but it was so funny because like it was a nickname that was complete nonsense and his name was just John.
Yeah. I think it blew my mind because in my mind, and I'm pretty sure this is true, I am the one who came up with Dave as the nickname.
Sure.
I declared the moniker.
Okay.
Yes. So I will take credit for it. But I remember there was this, I was like sitting in class and chatting about Dave with someone else and they were like, oh, Dave. Oh, I'm sorry. I just said his name out loud. Wow. Can't do that.
bleep that too.
Bleep that. And I was like, wait. Because this girl had nothing to do with the cross country or the track team at all. And I was like, wait, did you just call him Dave? And she was like, wait, is that not his name? But I'm like, I mean, it is. For sure it is. But like,
commit to that
for the rest of your life. Hard stop. But his name's John. But it's so funny that it's permeated so thoroughly.
Yes.
That you're calling him Dave. That was so funny. I can't, man, so many things like that.
I know. Well, and all this to say that we were talking about like really worn out clothing. And so if I go back to my eighth grade, giving people the bird night, t-shirt that we had, I think I was so immensely proud of like being on the team, especially cause it was like this like older thing. And it, like, I don't know, I put way too much stock in my involvement in the organization, but I wore that shirt to absolute shreds.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, to the point where like the sleeves just fell off of it.
Just fell off.
Basically. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not like I had this like muscle shirt almost, not to say that 121 pound Ben Carlin in ninth grade, you know, had muscles.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, still.
That's what it looked like.
That's what it looked like. And I remember I wore it over to our good buddy John's house one time. Different John, not Dave.
Not Dave.
And he was like, if you ever wear that shirt in front of me again, I will literally just physically remove it from you. And I was like, oh, all right.
Oh, never mind.
And so I think that was the day I retired my.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah. My very first year in cross country, I was, you know, equally as excited about like being on the team and whatnot, and they made hoodies, and I had never had like a team hoodie for anything before,
right?
And I don't think I even owned a hoodie, and it was like nowadays everyone has like 7 hoodies, but I want to say when I was in freshman high school, not everyone wore hoodies at all.
Okay,
like it was like, or there was some, there was almost like a like, no, you're not getting a hoodie. You know, that's like a little like slacker looking or something.
Oh, you know, I mean, maybe. Goodness forbid.
Goodness forbid. But now the whole team had them, so I was getting a hoodie. I'm so excited.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now you can be a slacker and a runner at the
exactly.
same time.
Exactly. It's like, you know what? They've just come around. Now I get to have one. It's going to be super cool. And I remember this exact hoodie. It was super cool. It said CSXC on the front, and it was embroidered in the Abaddon font, which was the Cave Spring font.
Cave Spring font.
Still is.
Yep.
And believe you me, in high school, I thought it was the coolest font.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, it is cool.
Yeah, I mean, especially like the way that the words Cave Spring look in the font, it's like, it's perfect.
Yeah, the C and the S look really good together.
Chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss, indeed. So it said CSXC on the front, embroidered. It had like, and then less good, it had the word Knights across the hood in big blocky red letters with like a big white stroke on it.
Sure.
And then in yet a third font, it had like 2 different quotes just in red on the back.
Nice.
Right. So 3 fonts, 1 hoodie.
That sounds like a bad movie.
It does. 3 fonts, 1 hoodie.
Yeah. Starring Will Ferrell.
And it was my favorite hoodie like ever. I wore it all the time. And it was like the best. Like, we never did the hoodies again, or at least we didn't get like good quality ones. I don't know. But eventually, somehow, I completely misplaced it and I could not find it. And I was like, I don't know what. It got lost in the shuffle of, you know, 4 years of 3 kids worth of sports teams and gear and stuff. Oh, like, must have just gotten away from me. Or so I thought, Ben. So I thought. And then we were at this vacation location in Florida that Beth and her family would go to.
Would you like to give the exact address?
You know what? Yeah. It's called Bay Tree.
Nice.
And I'll just go ahead and say it because we don't go there anymore and it's not available to people, I don't think. And if you want to go there, I think you can just rent it. So just check it out if you want. I don't know.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. The people who own it, Beth's aunt worked for them. And as part of a perk for working there, they would let the employees go and bring their families.
Kind of neat.
Yeah, pretty good perk. Anyway, so I was a much removed beneficiary of this particular perk.
Nice.
But we were down there, and my brother-in-law comes and sits down on the couch, and then his wife, his bride, his new bride, comes down and sits next to him, Megan. And I look over at Megan, and I'm like, Megan, where did you get that hoodie? and Megan is wearing my hoodie.
Wow.
And this has been like 10 years later. I'm like, where did you get that? And she was like, oh, it was Daniel's. And I was like, no, it was not. And I'm like, no, Daniel didn't run cross country. And he was like, no, I just got it out of Beth's. It was hers. And I was like, Beth, no, it wasn't. Beth didn't run cross country. He was like, Beth didn't run cross country. And I'm like, she was your sister, bro. Certainly, you know, she didn't run track or cross country in high school. What is this? And this is now, I guess, at this point in Beth's life, she was running a lot. So maybe in his mind, he's like, I guess she always ran. I don't know.
Right, right. He's just sort of backfilling knowledge.
Sort of backfilling. And I'm like, no, that's my hoodie. And he's like, what? And then Beth like remembers like, oh, I think you gave it to me because like when we like at some point or something, right, she was wearing it or it ended up with her. And so what had happened is I'd given it to Beth. Beth had put it in her closet. Daniel had stolen it from Beth, and then Megan had stolen it from Daniel, and it had resurfaced in front of me in Florida like 10 years later. And I was like, I've been looking for that. She's like, do you want it? And I was like, no, it's fine. You can just now. It's just a funny story.
He's like, every year.
She's like, okay, because it's like my favorite hoodie. And I'm like, mine too.
I kind of give it back.
I know.
I don't want to be that guy. But I don't like, be that guy. Take it off. I mean, give it back.
Give it back to me. You can keep it, but like, give it back.
Right.
Give me my hoodie.
Can we just agree that like whenever it is exhausted and we are going to send it to the great hoodie in the sky or wherever hoodies go to die, then like it will return to my ownership.
Right.
Like I don't have to have it back, but like we know it's mine.
We
know it's my hoodie. You're borrowing it.
You're borrowing. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Your warmth is,
you know,
yours.
You're welcome.
Anyway,
it's my hoodie.
It's my hoodie.
Oh man. Anyway, Ben, I think you had some piping hot tea before we got off on a tangent, as we do.
As we do, it's about nearly like a 20-minute.
People
tangent
are like, "What was the tea?"
Once I'm dying to. I'm only staying on this episode because there was tea. Okay, I have like a moral dilemma type situation.
Okay,
that I don't know. Like, I don't know where to stand inside of this thing because there has been an incident that has arisen and it has a multitude of layers and I think that it like it really sits at the heart of social and moral ethics.
Lay it on me.
Yeah. Okay. So I Ben Carlin witnessed an affair.
You witnessed an affair.
I witnessed an affair. Yes.
So how? Okay. Where was the affair?
Where was the affair?
In what capacity did you witness the affair?
Okay, so basically what normally happens is I drop Addison off to preschool in the mornings, and typically after, like normally because there's such a rush in the mornings, like Allison and I don't get to talk a lot at the house before I leave. So I will go drop Addison off at preschool and then drive in to work and usually just like call Alice on that drive. So I'll just like sit on the phone for like a few minutes. So basically like the window of opportunity for me to witness this particular thing is open because I usually spend somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes sitting in the car talking to Alice before I actually walk into the office.
Got it.
Every morning.
Okay.
And so as a result, I go and I've got my truck and I do my back in thing because I back into all parking spots, something that I think does bother some people, but it's like just like one of those things.
You know? It's just totally fine. I mean, if you're in a truck, it's sort of like, I think that is like the easier way to park.
I think it's the easier way to park.
It doesn't bother me when I see trucks doing it. It bothers me when I see non-truck people doing it because I'm like, you're just
just showing off.
Nope. It's not showing off. It's wasting time.
Oh.
It's like, I got to wait for you to do this.
I see.
And you've basically pulled past it. So I thought I was going to get that spot. Turns out now not only are you taking the spot, you're taking an extra long time to steal my spot.
That was your spot.
Yeah.
Even though the other person was there first.
Well, they would have been there first if they hadn't driven past it.
I see. Well, okay. I gotcha. I tend to think that your manifestation of parking spots is so triumphant and you've never had to deal with the woes of not having a parking spot because you manifest parking spots. And I have been the beneficiary of this unique magical ability that which you possess and was bestowed upon you by the gods at birth.
Okay.
Yes. So
I have had my share of when you have to drive to campus at Virginia, or not anymore because now there's a parking garage because of this exact problem. Yeah. But if you have to drive to campus at Virginia Tech, when I went there, there were, let's say there were 500 parking spots. That's probably low. But there were, let's say there's 500 parking spots. I guarantee you there were 700 people who needed parking spots.
Right.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
And good golly, if you had to be, I mean, if I had class at like 10 and it was like, okay, I realistically, if I were to just drive there and get a parking spot, I could leave at 9:45.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
5 minutes to get there, park, 10 minute walk, boom, no problem. I would leave at like 9 to get just to be like, I know I'm going to be
I'm gonna be circling the blocks.
I'm gonna be like up and down. I'm gonna have to follow someone. I'm gonna be like, sometimes you have to roll down your window and be like, are you? I'm gonna follow to your spot, okay?
It's like, please understand right now, I am following you, but not like that.
Right. And yeah. They'd be like, oh, sorry, I'm actually gonna be like, I'm over there, and that's like, you know, a median away.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay, okay.
It's like, can you let me know if I'm hopping the curb correctly?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's like, guide me.
Right.
How's my bumper doing? Mm-hmm. Am I hitting anything? Mm-hmm. Am I going to scrape?
Yeah.
Now you're good. You're good.
Yeah.
Just full send. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all, I have had more business ideas than I care to count. Like in third grade, I learned to fold those like paper fortune teller things that I thought I could just, you know, huck to my classmates. Then there's the corkscrew hot dog concept out there somewhere. A food truck, aquarium maintenance. I actually did that one. YouTube, coffee, and maybe even someday 27 Butts Production Studio Incorporated. The point is that if you're even 10% like me, you have a business idea that has been nagging at you somewhere deep within, and 2026 could be your year. Time to finally rent a gorgeous quarry-adjacent single bathroom, that's important, mansion to film the latest holiday calamity classic, 27 Butts. But then there's the age-old question of where to sell your product. They used to say location, 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 but I'd argue Shopify, because Shopify is what we use for our own merch and future toilet-themed film studio store, and it's amazing how much insight Shopify truly offers, what products are popular, and just as importantly, which ones aren't. Plus, as you grow, Shopify grows with you. Handle more orders, expand to new markets, and do it all from the same dashboard. So in 2026, stop waiting and start selling with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/poppop. That's shopify.com/poppop. One last time for safety, shopify.com/poppop. Hear your first... this new year with Shopify by your side.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Running connects us. The early mornings, the personal bests, the shared finish lines. At Marathon Sports, we're proud to be part of that journey with you. Our team helps you find shoes that fit your stride, apparel that feels good, and gear that keeps you moving. Stop by one of 28 New England locations or shop online at marathonsports.com. Marathon Sports, inspiring movement in everyone.
Full send. Anyway, you're in the parking lot.
I'm in the parking lot. I'm backed into my parking spot. I am on the phone with Alice. And basically what I witness is a woman walk over from around the corner, get inside of a vehicle, and then I can see through the back window, because it's directly in front of me, mm-hmm. these two people promptly, full-blown, making out.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Snogging, as they say in Hogwarts. And you
snogging
know,
in the hog.
That's it. They say it all the time. It's going around.
It's basically Snogwarts, you know? Right.
It basically is. Yeah. It's also one of those words that has way too much mucus connotations for my liking.
It sounds like it. Sounds like a really messy kiss.
It does, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that is also kind of similar to what I was witnessing.
Okay.
And it was the kind of thing like where I'm sitting there and like, you know, it's not like immediately obvious. Not immediately, you know, that this isn't just sort of like a, especially because like we live in kind of like a hospital town, mm-hmm. like that's like the big industry that's like sort of blown up around Roanoke. And so like, even in my head, I'm sort of like, there's a possibility that what I'm witnessing is like people who have competing schedules of like got off night shift, maybe the significant other works downtown. They do like a quick rendezvous just to like meet up or whatever. And that's like the way they can like make sure that they're getting like quality time in, because otherwise they're working polar mm-hmm. opposite schedules.
Sure. Yeah.
And you know, so I'm trying to give like some serious benefit of the doubt here.
Right.
But it's now just
for clarification for the listeners at home, they're not like getting in the car and it's just like a quick peck on the cheek or something.
No. They are getting in the car and becoming involved.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
At, you know, 9:00 in the morning on a Monday.
Okay. Okay. And they're not like, it's not like teenagers.
No.
They're like a grown...
They're
like,
grown okay. people.
Because I could see teenagers doing this.
I could also see... I think that that's part of like the rite of passage of getting a vehicle is like, a, like an amount of... You have an enclosed area that now belongs to you.
Right.
For the first time ever. So there's that. But no. So grown adults... Certainly not like any of these other kind of like fringe type potential situations. Cause that's like what I'm sitting there thinking. I'm like, I'm looking at it and I'm kind of like, man, this is aggressive. It's like this, you know, and mm-hmm. I even try to think like, even if like Alice and I were to like rendezvous or whatever for like a quick, like, hey, let's go, you know, grab a coffee together or something. Cause we have like 15 minutes before we both have to go to work. Like, I'm like, that's not how we would use it. You know,
right.
Like, I'm like, this is way too physical.
To just go like snog in your car.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And so I'm like something seems like this was like awaiting.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically like I witnessed it at first. I'm kind of like, okay, bit odd.
Okay, let's, and like they don't drive away together. He like just a car pulls up, she gets in, they kiss, she gets out.
Right. Yeah. They basically make out for probably, you know, somewhere between 10 and 15 minutes. And then like she gets out and walks back around the corner.
Wow. Okay.
You know, so you're sort of like, well, that was weird. You know, this is a weird thing to see.
Right.
And so I think the first time I actually witnessed it, I just sort of was like, I'll just give it a pass. Like whatever.
Yeah.
And then I witnessed it again and the same thing happened again. And I was like, okay. You know, like this is unusual.
Right.
And it's like, and of course, like I'm on the phone, like with Alice. And so I'm just sort of like, I'm like, I have to take I'm taking a video of this. I know that I shouldn't.
Oh no.
But I was sort of like, these people are like, they're, you know, I mean, and it's not like, I keep saying it as if it's like very inappropriate. They're just kissing. But it's sort of like, it's, you know, it's still like, it's so obvious that you can see it through a rear tinted window.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just kind of becomes this like funny thing that I'm sort of like, wow, I can't believe like I saw that, you know, like mm-hmm. I mean, because it's probably not even that on the whole uncommon to be out there in the world. And like, you could be like bearing witness to these kinds of situations. It reminds me of like the Coldplay concert thing.
Yeah.
You know, like where like you get like on the Kiss cam or whatever, but you're there with somebody you're not supposed to be there with. And all of a sudden the whole room is like, why did those two people hide? That was very suspicious.
Right.
But like, if you were at the concert, you could witness that and have no idea that what you're witnessing. So it's like, to me, I'm like, I just got to witness something and like in a capacity that they definitely think nobody's paying attention.
Right.
And I'm only there because I have like a morning ritual with Alice.
Right.
So anyway.
And what makes you think it is an illicit behavior and not just like a blossoming young relationship behavior?
Well, so that's the other thing too, is that like you try to like work through what could be the potential scenarios where it's sort of like what might lead people to doing this like this intensely right away, because the alternate would be like you go on a date after work, or you're like going to each other's homes or like whatever. So mm-hmm. It's like the timing, I think, just seemed odd. And so basically I'm just sort of observing it with this like headcanon theory, and it's just sort of like my own personal little thing.
Okay.
And like I guess like what it ultimately comes down to is like I can't know for certain exactly what's involved here.
Right.
But I feel like it's brought up like amongst everybody, because you know, it's just, like it, I think it's like just like a very interesting thing to witness. It's like you're seeing drama happen in real time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's kind of like, whoa, crazy.
Right.
But then it does bring up this like interesting question that I think you could pose like on the whole, where it's sort of like, you know, it reminds me of the Dark Knight, where I think the Joker is like giving a little thing where he's like, it's like a dog chasing a truck. It's like, he doesn't know what he would do with it if it caught it.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like, you know, like I don't know. It's like I caught the truck. I don't know what to do with it now that
right,
I caught
right,
it.
You right.
know, and you're sort of, so I feel like I've been talking with everybody about the situation, and it's sort of, I think everybody kind of has like a very different perspective on what you're supposed to do. Like if you know that somebody is having an affair, it's like if you witness somebody at the store and you were like watching them shoplift, do you say something? Or do you not say something?
Right.
You know, because it's sort of like, that's, it's like a very, like, that's almost like against the law, you know, that's like breaking
right.
the rules. But of course you also don't know their circumstances, and it's not your job mm-hmm. to police it either.
Right.
And so the same is true, like in some way out here in the real world, where it's like, it's not like a breaking of legality, but it is a, you're witnessing what is otherwise a big breakage of trust.
Yeah, an unethical decision.
An unethical decision. And so it's fascinating to me, like you know, if you could, if you like, if you, what do you do? Like if you knew who these people were, would you say something?
Right. Oh man, it is tricky. It is tricky. There is a literally, I think a Vince Vaughn movie about this exact thing. Just called The Dilemma.
Okay. Yeah. I think we've talked about this.
Yeah. That's a little bit more like he witnesses like his very best friend and business partner's like longtime wife having an affair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, yeah, it's like, it seems like, well, duh, just tell him. But then it's like, he has like a heart condition and they're in like a high stress environment at work. And it's like,
What if I tell him what information kills him?
Right. Yeah. Or like makes him lose focus and then we lose the business and then both of our families or whatever. Yeah. So that's more of a, they have to like an add in a layer of dilemma there, but this is strangers, I guess, or maybe not. Like, what do you do if you know?
Yeah. It's like, and like, I think on the one hand, I think that like, I think back to moments of my own life, like growing up and, you know, being in like bad high school relationships where something that somebody was doing seemed very suspicious, but like the calling somebody on a lie is like a very challenging thing to do because it like also like if you challenge it too far, it can destroy any trust. So right. Like if they say like, no, I'm not doing anything weird, I'm just going to study with a friend, and then you go and like press it and they're just studying with a friend, then it's kind of like you've invaded their privacy, it feels like. Mm-hmm. Is like what ends up happening. But then on the flip side, I also had situations in high school where it was like, I'm going to go study with a friend, and then it wasn't, and it was right. Like, and then you discover and you're like, well, this really sucks.
Right.
So it's like, it's difficult because like I feel like I can go back to like this mental space myself. And it's like, if someone knew and they could tell me or even like potentially validate a suspicion that they may be having in the face of like, you know, the lack of truth being explained, there's a piece of me that's like, I know the kind of relief about knowing the truth that can come, but also with that relief is a huge onslaught of negativity.
Right.
You know, which is also then like your world kind of like blows up in front of you.
Right.
So it's like, you don't want to be right, but being right can also be validating, but validating can also then come with torment.
Well, that's assuming you have suspicion, you know, like it could come at you as a complete blindside.
Also true.
You know,
also true. And yeah, so I feel like as I've like lobbed this out, I feel like there's a myriad of different responses where I feel like some people are like, I would want to know.
Okay. So let's the right now they're strangers, right?
Yeah.
So do you think you could identify either of them, their face?
I doubt it.
Okay.
I doubt it.
Let's say you recognize one of them.
Sure.
Right? And now you are out in public and you witness one of them with their true significant other, not the...
of course, at this point, how would I know?
How would you...
How do you know who's the true one?
Who's it? Well, that'd be so funny.
I have now witnessed the same woman with two different people and I don't know which one to tell.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll assume... You can see their wedding rings. They're married.
Okay.
Right? These two are married and now like they're out in public together, furniture shopping. You're furniture shopping.
Sure.
You know, right?
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
You see the cheater. We'll just say it's the husband. He says, I'm going to the bathroom.
Right.
And he goes to the bathroom. Now you know that guy is meeting another woman in the parking lot to snog on the regular.
Right.
You are now there with his true wife, a stranger to you, but you're there isolated looking at couches and you've got like at best 5 minutes to make a decision.
Is there a moral obligation?
Is there, do you say, what do you do?
That's what I don't know.
I know.
It's like, because, you know, like I talked to Alice about it and like, I feel like Alice's opinion was very distinct. Like, no, you don't say anything. Like, it's not our lane. It's not our business. Like, just stay out of it. Like, you don't want to go get involved. And that's where like, even there can be like a very like, you know, shoot the messenger type problem as well.
Right.
You know, where it's like, This is probably from like having seen like way too many like dramas, like mm-hmm. crime dramas and stuff, where somebody's brought in for questioning after like an attack has happened or something. It's like, can you think of anybody who would want to like cause you harm? And like in my mind, I'm like, if you're the person who was involved with these other people's situation and you don't know the temperament of either of them at all, then it's sort of like, at some point in time, that person, the person who you're exposing, it's like you might be giving them cause, you know,
to hurt you,
like motive.
I see.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Right.
Do you follow? Like,
I see what you mean.
From like it's a crime, like,
from
drama.
Their point of view, like you ruined their life. You know, you broke up my marriage, and it's like, well, okay. First of all, I didn't do that.
Yeah, I think you did that. Yeah. Yes. However, comma, you may still blame me.
Right.
For this particular
right.
yes, problem. Because
right.
if not for me, you would have been fine.
Right.
Probably.
But also, if not for you, if not, shame on you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
If not for you, you would have been fine.
Right, yeah. It's like, yeah, all I did was bring attention to light. So that's the other thing too. It's sort of like, do you want to go and be involved? Do you want that? Do you want like any of this attention pointed back at you mm-hmm. in any way? Because now all of a sudden they care who you are.
Right.
You know, it's like, why do you know?
Right. Why do you know? Why do you know? It's like, dude, you're like right in front of me.
Literally. Yes. Right. Yeah. It's like, I'm just part.
I mean, you certainly, there is a certain amount of like, you know that this fellow customer of yours at the furniture store is being cheated on the reg.
Right.
Right. And like, it does feel like maybe you should say something because that she deserves to know. She deserves to know.
Right.
Right. Probably. But then on the other hand, like, what if you tell her and it's like, I mean, this is, you've only got 5 minutes. It's a hard pill to swallow. Like, maybe you don't believe it right away. You're just a stranger.
Right.
You know, now what you don't want, on the other hand, is to be like involved in like a, you know, meet up with me, show me where it's at, give me more details,
right.
You know, run it back. And now you don't want to be involved in their lives outside of having delivered the information.
Right.
Right.
Yes. Okay. So then like you could take it like more steps forward as well, where it's like because this is the other thing too. It's like, I think the counter that I feel like some of the people have brought up is that like, it's not technically like illegal. It is maybe not the most moral thing that you can engage with, but
right.
like the act of, you know, cheating on a spouse is not illegal.
Right.
Like nobody will be arrested
right.
for their actions involved. But, I do think like let's throw another layer into the fold here where there's potentially like kids involved.
Right.
You know, it's like if you go into like a custody battle, does something like this play a role? Like does
oh, right.
You know, because then it's the type of thing where it's like if you just choose to get divorced or whatever, then there's that.
Right.
But like if all of a sudden it's like there was foul play involved, you know, it's kind of like, does that impact
yeah.
A trickle down effect, because then you're talking about like a third innocent party altogether,
right?
Who could potentially be impacted if the information is otherwise left undiscovered.
Sure.
You know, I'm probably making it more serious than it needs
I mean,
to be.
No, I mean, there's, you know, like it's not elite. I mean, it's like, it's not, you know, like illegal to have the affair. There might still be legal ramifications in the form of like a divorce or something.
Correct.
Where like lawyers get involved or something like that. And yeah, I mean, then what are you doing? You need to like provide, you know, the video you took or something. Do
right.
do they ask you for that? It's like, I don't know. So it is a question. Should you do it? Just, I mean, whether or not you end up more involved. I mean, I don't know.
I know. It feels like
you should tell them.
I know. It feels like reverse Carp Girl to me. So like in case you're unfamiliar with like the long running lore of the Pop, I went to this summer camp when I was a kid. There was someone who was at the camp with me who fell into like we went to the Smith Mountain Lake Dam. And at the dam, there's this like little dock area where you can go and take popcorn and feed it to carp. And while I was there, this one girl fell in with the carp. And it was this like absolutely over the top, ridiculous thing to have witnessed.
Right.
And growing into adulthood, I've always wanted to go back and reunite with Carp Girl so that I would have the ability to be like, oh my God, what is your recollection of this? Like, can you tell, can you confirm for the rest of the world the madness that was the Carp Girl moment?
Right.
And it would just be like, it's so interesting because I'm allowed to take that piece of information, throw the funnel out into the world. And if Carp Girl somehow ever has like a friend or a cousin or a family member or anybody who listens to this show and they're like, oh my God, I know someone who fell into a pile of carp. Because surely this is a story she's telling her family and friends.
Surely. It's come up.
How do you not fall into a pile of carp and then tell everybody you know about it?
Right.
It's not embarrassing. It's not shameful.
Right. It's not shameful.
Yeah.
So imagine though, like alternatively, if someone out there in the world is listening to me and like this is almost a situation where it's like, I personally own a piece of evidence that could matter to you.
Right.
But it's like, okay. So another example I could give would be that like my truck recently got run into by like the drunk driver, mm-hmm. Just outside my house or whatever. And one of the really unfortunate things about it was they ran into my across the street neighbor's car, bounced off that car, ran across the street, ran into my car, seriously damaged their car in the process, but still managed to leave the scene of the crime altogether.
Right.
Which means I was not able to hold them responsible for the damage, or their insurance responsible for the damage. I had to seek my own insurance.
Right.
Which is like, it's like, oh, that sucks. I'd rather it be their insurance than my insurance that has to pay for it. And so it's the kind of thing where like, I tried to get otherwise surveillance footage from someone's like Ring camera or otherwise that could potentially reveal to me who this person is.
Right.
And it's like, they're out there right now.
Right.
When it's like, it's even possible that a different house somewhere crazy down the street witnessed a car very bedraggled, like limping its way back into its driveway.
Right.
And being like, whoa, what happened to your car last night? And it's like, ran into a deer.
Right. Yeah.
or something. I don't know. But like, it's like someone out there could possess the evidence that I would need to find whoever that is.
Right.
And this is like, I have a piece of evidence that might matter to you, but I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what this also reminds me of? If you're getting into like, it's like whether or not you should get involved or whatever.
Yeah.
Is the, do you remember the movie Liar Liar with Jim Carrey?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So like, you're like in the movie, there's a situation where Jim Carrey is a lawyer and he is representing a woman who is in a custody battle.
Yeah.
I believe. Right. And as her lawyer, he is trying to win her custody of the children or whatever.
Right.
But in the course of the, the movie, he ends up, having relations with his client, which is all sorts of wrong.
Yes. Right. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Right. But like, I forget what the initial battle is over, but like in the end, I think he ends up winning the case, but then like, it's like he wins, but he loses because like the dad is there at the case too. And like the dad is a good dad.
Right.
And he is just effectively like taking the kids away from the good parent and giving them to the bad parent who you've seen do bad things.
Right.
In the movie. And you're like, wow, that is like for all you know, you're witnessing the good parent. Maybe the reason this affair has happened is because the other person is terrible.
Well, also true.
Which sounds like a really bad marriage overall, but.
Well, right. Yeah. There's that. Yeah. So anyway, it's like, I don't know what to do. And I feel like it's funny because like you can tell people and it's like everybody kind of has a slightly different perspective on like what is going on, which I think probably that's like where it starts is like this like piping hot tea thing where it's like, wow, I witnessed like an interesting thing. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
But then also it's like time goes on. It's like there are people involved and it's kind of serious and it's like, And I think that's probably where it's like when you see these things like in TV and movies and stuff like that, it's like it's juicy or like even like reality TV.
It's what makes it interesting.
Yeah. But then I think that's probably what's also happening is that like as soon as anybody is truly and actually faced with the like reality of the situation, it's like it's darker than it seems.
Right.
It's like, oh, crap. Like someone will be impacted by this somehow.
Right.
So there's that.
I would also say that it feels like the situation changes if you knew the people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if they're just strangers, it's like how involved are you going to get in strangers' life? Like if you, are, let's say you're witnessing this happen, then you go to a Christmas party and your friend, you know, Amanda shows up.
Right.
And she's like, oh my gosh, Ben, you haven't met my husband yet. And you're like,
wait a second.
Yes. Jacques. You know. And you're like, oh no. Then you have to tell Amanda, you know?
Right. I know.
Right.
I know. Yes.
Then it feels like you have like a little bit more, yeah. I don't know, responsibility.
Right. Like if this was like a close friend and I witnessed their significant other out, I feel like then the ones and zeros of it all seem to align rather quickly where it's like, yeah, I'm going to tell my friend, like, I'm not going to like know something is happening that would negatively impact them and have them be blindsided by it.
Right.
You know, like, mm-hmm. it'd be better for them to know.
Right.
So I think if it was like a friend, I feel like I would tell them.
Okay.
You know, and, mm-hmm. but then I guess the distance is sort of like how far away from friendship do you have to be from a person before you think it is like, before it becomes like inappropriate to become involved.
I know. I don't know what the answer is.
I don't either. I know. So that's why I was like, I got to put it to the test. I need the feedback from the world.
Little kernels,
the little kernels
to weigh in.
Yeah. So popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Send me your thoughts. But anyway, actually I feel like it's a healthy spot for a little transition here.
Oh,
because I had an interesting, as is so often the case, like maybe like mental health analogy that I was like, oh, this could be interesting.
Okay.
Because it actually pertains to this exact, you know, topic of conversation. Okay. And something I've already mentioned, which is that like when I was younger, I like witnessed and experienced layers of foul play in relationships. And it's sort of like one of those things that like was difficult to have to be on the receiving end of. But like growing up, especially with this like people pleaser component of my personality, I think that there was a lot of like regulatory work going on all the time in terms of how I would interact with others. And what I mean by that is that like I would usually go to extraordinary lengths to make sure that my emotions were not getting the best of me, because I felt like if I was reacting to a situation emotionally, then I wasn't reacting to the situation rationally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that like I never wanted my emotions to be beating what the right thing is to do inside of a given situation, or even to react to something in a way where then you're going to have to like backpedal to get back to the point where it's like, ooh, I messed up. I was acting in the heat of the moment there. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know. So what happened a lot when I was growing up and experiencing like deep negativity was I would bottle it. And like, I understand that that's not really like a thing that like anybody would be like shocked to hear, you know, like people bottle mm-hmm. emotions all the time.
Yeah.
But what I started thinking about was like in the movie Monsters, Inc., when they go into like the doors, they have those like cute little yellow scream canisters that they like collect the emotion with.
Right.
And so you can like see like the little bar, like fill up the canister as like Sully goes in and like scares a slumber party or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, ha, okay. Right. There's a canister of like emotion.
Right.
And so I think like what was happening to me throughout my life was I was experiencing these like major, you know, I would call them traumatic moments, but, and I would fill these canisters with like anger, frustration, fear, sadness, like whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But like what I would do outwardly is try to react in like a more measured, calm, like way.
Right.
So what would happen is like I would never feel the emotions. I would never experience everything that I put in those canisters.
Mm-hmm.
But then the problem, and so like for the most part, I can park them next to the memory, no big deal. They're only as dangerous as they are interacted with.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like what happens though is that like when situations like this arise, and this is almost like me even like experiencing like real like emotional triggers in a way that it was like, oh, okay, like when people say that, like this is what they mean, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like I witnessed something that hits an emotional trigger for me, which makes me go back and relive some of these past experiences of my own life where it's like, even though they're like so far behind me, and I rationally know that they're far behind me and that the people involved with those situations cannot hurt me.
Right.
And I have no like ongoing desire to interact with any of the people involved. It's like rationally, I know that it's like, that's behind you.
Right.
Like the situation from when you were 16, 21, whatever, 24, those things, they can't hurt you anymore.
Right.
They are long gone.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like those canisters of emotions, it's almost like I like jostle them.
Right.
You know, and it's like it will let off like bursts. You know, it doesn't allow you to get through the whole canister of emotions. So they mostly stay full. But it's like you go through, you jostle them, and some of them like release.
Right.
And then you're like, crap. Why am I still feeling?
Right. Yeah. Angry or sad or whatever.
Yes. And it's like, and I feel it in such like an authentic way.
Yeah.
You know, that it's like the same thing as feeling like hot or cold. It's like by interacting with this memory, it makes me angry. By interacting with this memory, it makes me sad.
Yeah.
It makes me frustrated. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and it's like, I don't know what to do with them.
Right.
Is the problem. So I feel like the breakthrough for me lately was the discovery that it was like, okay, these canisters exist. I can now picture them. I can put a name to them. I can draw a picture of like the situation and draw a web between all the people who were involved. And I can like feel the emotional like weight. Like if I almost like hover my hand over like this name versus this name,
mm-hmm.
it's like, okay, this one hurts. This one doesn't.
Right.
You know, it's like, this is weird.
Right.
And so like, to me, the really good thing is that like several of these things, I feel like have like followed me for like a long time and I would love to let them go.
Right.
And so if you've listened to the pod for a long time, you know, I've talked about the podcast, like Heavyweights before, which are heavyweight. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And basically what that does is finds people who have these similar situations and pretty much goes and like revisits the past.
Right.
You know,
like tracks down the person on the other end of the feelings.
Right.
20 years later.
And so from a spectacles perspective, for the purposes of that podcast, it's very interesting to be like, hey, this is me at age 36. You cheated on me when we were 16. Can we talk about it now when we're both like completely off in different phases of our life?
Well, like, it's like you can, I mean, even the like you sure they those people are not in your life anymore. Like they can't like physically harm you or like, you know, they can't emotionally harm you or whatever. But what happens is, you know, when you're going through these like rough things, when you're in these like more formative years, it like informs how you react and how you feel about similar situations sort of like moving forward. It's like, this is your experience point for how to deal with the hard spot in relationships or like trust or whatever.
Right.
You know? And it's like that's all you have to go on. You know, you can know that it worked differently for other people, but in your personal lived in experience, this is like the negative association you have moving forward.
Right. Exactly.
And like, yes. You know, 16 years later, you know, that might still be the only lesson you have with it. Like, I remember this is like, to make it a little more like tactile, I suppose, and less like emotional. Like when I was working at the concert venue for nice. People with your bingo boards, the first year or the first like 6 months I worked there, the person who was like my supervisor was like, you know, training me how to do all the different things around the venue to keep everything updated and like, you know, work with all the software and stuff like that.
Okay.
But it turns out that part of the reason that they hired me was because they wanted to let my supervisor go and they needed someone there to like fill the gap while they then hired that person.
Right.
To replace them because they were not happy with the way they were doing things, which is, you know, fine or whatever. But in the meantime, it meant I got trained by the person they didn't like to do a bunch of different stuff.
Right. Yes.
Right. And so I remember like a day, like 4 years in, and they like asked me about something. They're like, well, why do you do it this way? And I'm like, I don't know. That's how I was trained to do it by, you know, and they're like, that's who trained you? And I was like, yes. And they're like, well, do you think that's the right way to do it? And I'm like, obviously not, but it's been 4 years and this is how it was told to do it then. And I don't know how I'm supposed to have a different experience with it, you know?
Right. Yes.
Right. Like I was told this how do. And then no one corrected me for a long time. So this still how do?
Right.
Not how do?
Not how do? Yeah, it's like we talk about it like when we're theory crafting all the time, like when we're trying to like come up with something where it's like we want like a similar set of circumstances attached, you know, like if the Harry Potter series or whatever, to the kind like the branch of magic that we're dealing with. And it's like we want established precedent. So it's like, we know that this is true here.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, if we're trying to make our case over here, then we need the closest precedent that we have,
right,
which is this situation. And I think you're right. Like, I think it's like you're going through life and you're sort of building like your own moral constitution with its own, you know, set of like judicial incidents, if you will.
Right.
And like in the world of legal stuff, it's like we establish precedents because precedents basically, it's a responsibility placed upon the people involved to be like, listen, if we rule this way, we are establishing that this is how we rule against
in similar situations.
And so it's like, not only is it like the specifics and the responsibility of the specific situation that you're in, it is the potential damage based on how you rule for how it could be interpreted by the law going forward.
Right.
And so it's like, we can't give you a pass here because if we give you a pass, we have to give everybody a pass because that's how legal precedents work.
Right.
And it's like, we can't just do that. So it's like a way to kind of like keep the system upholding itself. But obviously in life, then you end up having these same situations. And like the big difference is that 16-year-olds are by comparison, not as mature with their emotions and feelings and decision-making as, you know, people who have 20 years more life experience. And I'm speaking in broad strokes there. I know that's probably not true in all instances. And I bet there's a lot of very mature 16-year-olds that do exist out there in the world.
Sure.
Who are doing a great job of managing things, and a bunch of really idiotic 36-year-olds who aren't. But in general terms, I think it's safe to say that more experience probably makes you a little bit better at reacting to things. But it's almost like the lessons you learn as a 16-year-old are almost non-applicable to lessons you know, like as a 36-year-old.
Right.
It's like you're dealing with a completely different set of people with a completely different set of priorities and responsibilities.
Right.
You know, what you might do when you're 16 is not who you are when you're 36. And so anyway, all that to say, though, it's like I don't want to do the heavyweights style version of it. I don't want to go like rustle up a bunch of negative emotions from people in the past, or even like open doors to things that probably to many people just feel closed.
Right.
It's a very like me problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's not your problem that I have kept these canisters in my brain. It's a me problem. And I want to figure out how to like degas them.
Right.
You know, so like, what is the way? But so it's interesting because in the modern era, people talk a lot about, like, I feel like it's almost like a buzzword, like to say like mindfulness, you know, but like mindfulness is a good thing. You know, it's like, it is something that we should like be good at, you know, participating in or like whatever, but what does it even mean? You know, cause mindfulness makes it just sound like, hey, think about things.
Yeah.
You know? But to me, this is almost sort of like taking those things and trying to like enter a state where I can like set all the pieces on the board in front of me and like experience the emotions in like a safe, controlled environment so that they can go away.
Do you feel like, has it been working?
Well, I would say that the analogy is something that I found super helpful, which is why I wanted to bring it up on the
pod. Okay.
Because I was like, you know, I feel like maybe it's something that like people can go and be, like, you know, recognize their own canisters, give those canisters names, you know, like, you know, because that is something that we can do to lessen the weight that we carry on our shoulders with us every day. Because while these things are things of the past, and while they maybe can't hurt you anymore, it doesn't mean that you don't still feel the weight of them in your everyday life.
Right.
And I think that's to your point, where it's like, if you've had these experiences that help dictate how you make decisions now, it's almost like it might help you to get to process those emotions, but you don't want to process those emotions in a way that is irresponsible either.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
Makes
so
sense.
All this to say, though, that like witnessing an affair was like one of those things where I was like, I have like negative, not with anything in my adult life.
Right.
But I have negative emotions attached to this experience.
Right.
And like, I felt it like touch, you know, like it forced me to go through and like ring some canisters.
Right.
And I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So, but more than anything, it's like, you can't protect yourself from ever witnessing something like this again. All you can really do is try to release whatever feeling you have towards it from the past.
Right.
So that it isn't a problem in the forward.
Right. So I guess, I don't know. What do you do moving forward? I guess are you going to get involved?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to get involved, but what I really think would be like the right thing to do, like I think about like the ice baths that I've done in the past or whatever, like very cathartic experience, very intense experience. Like, you know, your body sort of does like some survival-y type things, I'm sure, in response to the extremely cold water. But like what occurred to me was to try to take some of these emotions and very intentionally not use them as like fuel to drive like an ambition, because I feel like that's like kind of like using borrowed energy from the past to try to do something, you know, in the forward. But if you could use like an ice bath or like a situation like that to almost go in, enter as best as I'm capable of a meditative state, which is not very good because my brain chirps a lot. There's a lot going on up there. But then almost try to use the cathartic experience of like the ice bath as a, like as a procedure to like exit the emotion. So I'm trying to like, you know, weaponize a modern day health benefit against a former day negative emotional contact point.
So you're, let me get this straight then, if I'm understanding you, you're like preparing the ice bath, getting all into the middle of experiencing a negative emotion from your past, and then purging it by plunging.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The old plunge and purge.
Does that make sense?
If it's working, then yes.
If it's, well, I mean, and so that's the thing. Like, I think, like, part of me thinks I could apply it to like running, you know, like I could go out and probably get myself all fired up on some negative emotion and go run
it out
and attempt to like burn it off or whatever. But like running is a thing that like, I, and maybe these things are not, mutually exclusive, but it's almost like, I feel like if I burned through it with running, or if it even made me good at running, then I don't want to be like, well, I need my fuel.
Oh, right.
You know, like,
right.
Like, turns out protein bars really help you, you know, run longer or whatever. But then it's sort of like you ate all your protein bars and now they're gone.
Right. Yeah.
So and you cannot have any more. Or do you start to seek more because then you need it for the fuel to do everything you're good at?
I suspect that if you just did enough runs, you'd just be good at running regardless of your emotional state.
Well, that's also probably true.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I suppose dispensing of all my fuel to be good at running in the name of feeling mentally better is also probably the type of thing where it's like, yeah, it's just worth it.
Yeah. And maybe you weren't even trying to get into running. You were just trying to get rid of your stuff, and then you got rid of it all. So now you don't have to run anymore.
You don't have to run anymore. It's like, it's like, why don't you run?
Literally.
It's like, I got rid of my baggage. Why do you run?
Why do you run? Dude, I went for a run just yesterday.
How'd it go?
It was cold.
Yeah. I bet it was.
Yeah.
I bet it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you wearing the threadbare hoodie?
I was not, because I don't have it.
Oh, no, not the cross-country hoodie. The Celtics hoodie.
Oh, no, I was not. I had on a, like, smart wool undershirt and then, like, a, you know, like an Adidas, like, you know, track jacket or something.
All day I dream about soccer?
Yeah, something like that.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I had a just like a beanie and some running gloves. And then this was the mistake, was wearing shorts.
Ooh.
Yeah. I was like, I mean, hey, once I get out there, I'll be moving my legs, the blood will be pumping, it won't be a problem. It's not gonna be a problem. But let me tell you what, it was cold. My legs were actively cold.
Oh no.
It was like, it brought me so back to indoor track practice, which was not indoors, in high school, where every day it'd just be like, yeah, we're going outside and we're running. Prepare to be cold. Because you're going to be.
Because you're going to be. Yeah.
Because you're going to be. And yeah, I think a lot of times I was wearing shorts then. And it was like, yes, my legs are cold. I only went for like a 2-mile run. It wasn't very far. But, you know, I've been going to physical therapy. And between appointments, she was like, you know, just go for a run before your next appointment. I was like, all right, cool. And I hadn't gone for one. And then I had to go this morning. I was like, better go.
Oh, that's so funny.
So I got to get one in.
Have you been doing the running that I prescribed? It's like, yesterday.
I did it yesterday. Thank you very much. But it went and felt good, other than the biting cold. But I've also got like an armband, you know, to hold my phone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I, cause I in historically have not run with music, you know,
right.
Ever.
Right. Yeah. Missing out.
Yeah. Yeah. It turns out, but you know, I got out there yesterday. I dropped Luke off at practice for basketball, went on the run in the middle of practice, Got some Blackpink going in the ears there, and just, you know, it was much easier, I think, with music.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, maybe you're finding like your whole new motivational fuel for
maybe
your runscapades.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got it. We've done more running training for the next triathlon than we did last time, which was just one run, which I know it seems embarrassing.
But you did it.
But I did. I finished it last time, and we did the run yesterday. And honestly, it felt pretty good, other than the temperature.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fine. I wasn't like out of breath or anything. So okay. It was good. Yeah.
Well, that's great. That's great. I'm quite proud of you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I think that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of The Pop. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in. Be sure to send any feedback you have over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. But otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Running connects us. The early mornings, the personal bests, the shared finish lines. At Marathon Sports, we're proud to be part of that journey with you. Our team helps you find shoes that fit your stride, apparel that feels good, and gear that keeps you moving. Stop by one of 28 New England locations or shop online at marathonsports.com. Marathon Sports, inspiring movement in everyone.